What a wicked web we weave. Well, welcome back to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to what is now obviously the fastest growing segment of our society. To those of you like me who know that there's something dreadfully wrong, especially troubling, even destructive, about our religious and political institutions, about media reporting and military invasions, and about manipulative economic schemes. We realize that these institutions are part of the problem. They are no longer even a hint of the solution. So instead of merely casting out one set of bums, thinking that we can bring in a new set and solve the problem, we are about the realization that our problems have been caused by these institutions. So rather than merely presenting the news, our mission on this program is to understand who is creating these tragedies. Why is there a perpetual state of war? Who is behind them? What are they trying to gain? Why are they besieging our planet? And how will these events play out as we predict the next 5, 10, and 15 years of world history? Now, that doesn't paint a very hopeful picture, but there is hope. And that's why in our second hour, we're going to turn to evidence and reason in an analysis of what God had to tell us. Because there is a way to know him, for sure. There is a way to understand what he is offering, for sure. No faith required. In fact, faith not even desired. So in this program, we're going to wield words wisely as we search for answers for everything that ails us, from economic ruin to terrorism, from religious myths to political hypocrisy. Anytime over the next 2 hours, if you'd like to join in this discussion, you're invited to do so. Our number is 877-300-7645. For those who listen to this program, there is should be no surprise when I tell you that I'm no fan of SRN News. I think that's an absolute joke. They're wrong about most things, and this morning they had their military expert. He was identified as a lieutenant colonel, SRN's military expert. Oh, yes, he wants something done in Syria. He can't please a military guy like a good war. And he said, and I quote, "Assad has already killed 100,000 people." That's just factually untrue. 100,000 people may have been killed in this war. But it's a war that Assad did not start. And there is no reason to assume that up to this point that the either side, the rebels or the Assad factions, have been more than 60% successful. I can't even tell you which one would have been responsible for more deaths. You know, up to the last couple of months, the rebels were far more lethal than was the Assad government. The last couple of months, the Assad government has been more lethal than the rebels. But the fact of the matter is that the best guess, if we were to postulate a guess, would be that 50,000 people have been killed on both sides. To say that this is, pretend that this is a one-sided fight and that these rebels are little angels pleading for democracy that are being slaughtered by a ruthless dictator is criminally immoral. But that's kind of what the President of the United States inferred in his presentation. Oh, he called what Assad did to his people sickening with the chemical attack. Here's what we know for certain. Assad did not order that chemical attack. We know that for absolute certain. The Germans, the Israelis, and the United States monitor every communication between government troops and between government headquarters and the Assad regime. We know for a fact that every time any request has come to Assad to use chemical weapons, he has said unequivocally, no. We know for certain that he did not order this attack. And the American government does not want to tell the world that that is the truth. Now, the German government did. The Israelis all but have, in the sense that the Israelis said there's one communication that we intercepted regarding this particular chemical attack, and it's a frantic senior official in the Syrian military headquarters that's calling, making a call to another officer of lower grade in the suburbs of Damascus, and said, "You know, I've heard there's been a chemical attack. What in the world is happening? Can you explain? Tell me what happened." He's panicked. He knows the consequence that if the Syrians deliberately perpetrated a chemical attack, that this war that they had all but won would now be lost. And that's the only communication that we have in this particular case. It's why the United States is unwilling to make its evidence available. So we don't know who perpetrated this attack. But we know that both sides are disgustingly ruthless. So why is the Obama administration so desirous of engaging in a war where there is absolutely no possible outcome that could be considered favorable? Why are we painting a picture of an individual as being worth punishing when we know for certain he did not order the attack? You know, why is the war in Syria happening? Can we step back far enough to just think about why it happened? Do you think that Assad woke up one day and said, "You know, I think what I need to do is, here I am, I'm like every other Islamic leader, I've got my own personal estate." You know, you look around the Islamic world, it's that way for almost all of them. "I've got my own personal estate. I am fabulously wealthy because of the nature of the dictatorship. And so what I think I'm going to do today is make my life miserable. I'm going to go and start killing Sunnis." I mean, what more fun could you have than let's go out and kill some Sunnis? That'll really make my world brighter. Why did this war happen? Who's to blame for the Syrian civil war? If you don't know who's to blame, why it happened, then you got no business intervening in it. Now, we studied this on this program, and it's important to recognize it. And until we as a nation admit our culpability, and we admit the culpability of others, there is no hope whatsoever for this country. The United States foolishly, on a pile of lies, on evidence that was far more well-researched, far more ubiquitous, although wholly inaccurate, justified its war in Iraq. On a pile of lies, mind you, but all those lies were meticulously presented. Unlike this time, the lies aren't even being presented. And as a result of invading Iraq, we took Syria's enemy, and we gave Iran's enemy to Iran. Literally gave it to him, said, "It's yours now." So we had used Saddam Hussein, giving him chemical weapons so that he could use them on the Iranians. We specifically gave them to him and orchestrated his use of them. When he used them, we applauded, because they were being used against the Iranians. And so we deposed the enemy of Iran, the enemy that we were using to thwart Iran. And we gave the Iraqis one person, one vote. And for some reason, the United States wasn't smart enough to realize, 60% of these people, 65%, are Shia Muslims. They're going to vote for the Shia candidates. And all of the head clergy, the imams, the grand ayatollahs for the Shias in Iraq are Iranian. They're from the same clan, the same group that are the ayatollahs that run Iran. And so we gave Iraq to Iran. That was stupid. We spilled American blood, Iraqi blood, and American treasure, breaking that country, turning it into a mecca for terrorism, and we empowered Iran. And as a result of that, the Sunnis, like the Sauds and the Qataris and the Kuwaitis, became alarmed that all of a sudden this tiny percentage of Islam, representing about 10% of Muslims, the Shia are about 10%, Sunnis are about 90% of Muslims. This tiny percent of Muslims, the Shia, had increased their influence and power, now having control of not only Iraq, which had been previously their enemy, but because Syria was an ally of Saddam Hussein, with Saddam deposed and dead as a result of the United States invasion, all of a sudden now, Syria is a client of Iran. Our invasion of Iraq caused that. And then America, in its awakening program, decided that the swell thing to do would be to arm the Sunni militants so that they could oppose the Shiite militants that we had provided a massive army. And in addition to creating a civil war in Iraq, with 1,000 or more Iraqis being suicide bombed every month, those guns were deployed in Syria on behalf of the Sunnis to kill the Shiite government. And then the Saudi Arabians and the Qataris, having created a terrorist state in Libya with America's assistance, decided that they would intervene, and they began to arm not only the Sunnis that were Mujahideen opposed to the Assad regime, but they began to supply militants, as did the Taliban, as did the Libyans, the Saudi Arabians, the Qataris, and soon from all over the Sunni Islamic world, Syria was filled with Sunni Mujahideen, jihadists, armed to the teeth. And that's how this war began. Good morning. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. When you recognize that the United States is mostly to blame, we aren't solely to blame, the Sauds and the Qataris, Sunni Muslim nations around Syria are also to blame for the Syrian civil war. But the United States is primarily culpable. And yet the United States now wants to start another war, or certainly engage in another war. And this president did everything he could to try to convince Congress, to convince other nations, to convince the American people that the proper course of action in the Syrian civil war was for America to bomb Syria. It's just so preposterous. It's flabbergasting that the notion would even be postured, or that such simplistic views, Assad bad, needs to be punished, would be promoted to justify such an attack. How did we get into the mess of Iraq? Thousands of Americans dead. Perhaps as many as 100,000 American troops had their bodies mutilated. Between hundreds of thousands and a million Iraqis killed as a result of our invasion, the cost of which is estimated between $4 and $6 trillion. How did we get into that mess? Because we demonized Saddam Hussein. That was the simplistic view. Saddam Hussein, bad. Bad, bad, needs to be punished. And now we're doing it all over again in Syria? Can't we retain a lesson that is drenched in blood for a handful of years? Can't we look at Iraq now and realize that rather than fighting terrorism, we aided and abetted terrorism? That Iraq went from virtually no terrorist acts to a nation that every day there's a barbaric suicide bombing? What is it with us that we can't even evaluate what happened under our own watch? I mean, just think of this. What are the possible outcomes of America bombing Syria? Well, let's see. Our benefactor is China. If China were to stop buying American bonds, America will enter a recession that'll make 1929 look like a mosquito bite. And you're not going to dissuade China from backing Syria because it's in bed with Iran because of oil, natural gas. The same thing is true with Russia. And so do we wish to send cruise missiles over Russian warships? Do we wish to have Russia intervene and try to protect its ally against an American assault? Do we really wish to invite World War III? Is punishing Assad, whom we don't know, we absolutely do not know for certain if his troops or the rebels perpetrated this last gas attack? We know for certain that the previous gas attack was perpetrated by the rebels. But do we want to risk World War III? For this, particularly when we know Assad didn't order it, even if his troops did it? Is that what we're after? I mean, the total destruction of our planet? Are we so insane, so grotesquely immoral, that we think that bringing down the Assad regime, as despicable as it is going to produce a better result? Does anybody in their right mind think we got a better result in Afghanistan, in Libya, in Iraq, in Egypt? You know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different result. Has the entire nation become insane? Well, you know, there is hope here. And the one shred of hope is the purpose of this program. The majority of Americans know we ought not start another war, that we should not engage. The majority of Americans know that. And if for the first time, if the majority of Americans know that we ought not deploy our military in this way ever again, under any circumstances, there's hope, because Americans are beginning to think, they're beginning to recognize, wait a minute, our military isn't making things better, they're making them worse. And when we return to Shattering Myths, we will continue to cover this story, but I would be remiss if I didn't remind Americans what today is, that it is September 11th. And we need to be reminded of the lessons we did not learn on this day. Just imagine the indignity of it all. The great megalomaniacal, egotistical president of the United States, the man who views himself as superior to all other individuals, the man who presents himself almost as a messianic figure, particularly to the world of Sunni Muslims, the man who, when asked a question, comes off as indignant that some lower life form would even pose such a question to him, that when his administration is guilty of some of the most heinous crimes ever perpetrated in the White House, he calls them phony scandals and swipes them away with the back of his hand. Imagine this man committed to go to war on behalf of Sunni Islam against Shia Muslims, announcing to the world that that is his aim, sending America's armed forces so that they would be prepared to strike the critical blow on behalf of Sunni Muslims against the Shia. And then the man that he decided to say was like the spoiled brat in school that sat in the back of the room and just sulked, Vladimir Putin, the man he has sought to marginalize, that he wouldn't even have a summit with because he gave asylum to one of the most courageous Americans of our era, Edward Snowden. That now he has to grovel at Putin's feet. Putin is a very bad man, evil to the core. He's taken Russia from what was a communist regime that was heartless and brutal and murderous, that treated its own people as if they were slaves. And he was a KGB officer within that brutal regime. And he has now taken Russia right back to where the rest of the world is going, to a fascist regime, which serves the elite's interests. But here, Putin is the peacemaker. He offers a plan whereby the Syrians simply give up their chemical weapons and America can't have its war. Problem solved. The BBC article on this story that of how the president of the United States got played for a fool has a quip from Fox News, and it says the real plaudits should go elsewhere, not to the president of the United States. In one of this is the quote: in one of the most deft diplomatic maneuvers of all time, Russia's President Putin has saved the world from near certain disaster. By the way, that's not hyperbole. Had the United States gone to war against Syria, empowering the rebels, the consequence of a fundamentalist Islamic regime over Syria, next door to Israel, next door to all of those vast oil reserves in the Middle East, would have been a disaster, even if the Chinese decided they weren't going to buy American bonds and fund the destruction of its ally, even if the Russians didn't engage. He did so without the egotistical but incompetent American president or his earnest but clueless Secretary of State, even realizing that they had been offered a way out of the mess that they had created. Don't ever give ultimatums, my friends. That's what this president did that got himself into the fix. And he hated the notion that he was considered waffling and weak. And to a large degree, his desire to strike was just so that he wouldn't look incompetent with his red line. This president said, meanwhile, I have ordered our military to maintain their current posture to keep the pressure on Assad and to be in a position to respond. And he says, we will respond militarily if diplomacy fails. Now, what kind of response do you get under threats? You know, in Europe during the reign of cleric and king of Roman Catholicism, when people said, all right, I'll be a good person if you just stop torturing me. If you promise not to kill me, I'll go along. If you promise not to rob me, I'll capitulate. Is that what we're doing? Do we think that that is the right way to act in the world? You either agree to our terms or we're going to kill you. He said the diplomatic movements were in part a result of the credible threat of U.S. military action. He can't even admit that he was trumped. He wants to take credit for the work of others. He still wants the Congress to approve his desired strike, but the problem is the American people aren't in favor of it, and congressmen don't like to approve those things that are opposed to their constituents. I would remind you that today is the anniversary of an attack that we learned nothing from, 9/11. There's about 5% of Americans, particularly a higher percentage, probably on the Genesis Communication Network because of their most famous host, that believe that 9/11 was an inside job, that this government that can't do anything right somehow not only perpetrated 9/11 but managed to cover up their own actions to bring down those two buildings and then to bomb the Pentagon. That's what they'd like you to believe. You know, you think about it, too, it's the same thing as the Syrian conflict. It would be suicidal for Assad to order the use of chemical weapons. And there's just no chance he did. It's irrational. There is no chance whatsoever that the United States government ordered the destruction of the World Trade Center. It's irrational. Too much to lose, too little to gain. The reality of 9/11 is that the United States brought it on itself. That's true. A little history here is important because we don't seem to be able to understand much of anything as a nation. And yet, since the majority of Americans are now opposed to bombing Syria or engaging in any way in another Muslim war, there are enough Americans now with their minds open and receptive that what I'm going to share with you will resonate with many of you. America brought 9/11 on itself, and this is how we did it. When Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, now Saddam Hussein was an American ally. We supplied him with much of his weaponry. We provided much of his intelligence because he was the enemy of our enemy, and that's how America maneuvers in the world. We don't care how vile someone is if there are against a common foe. That's why we partnered with Mao Zedong and Stalin in World War II, leaving the world worse than we found it as a result of our alliances. Well, in the case of Iraq, we took a ruthless dictator. We partnered with him. Our CIA was involved in supplying him with all manner of weaponry and intelligence because he was using it to kill hundreds of thousands of Iranians. Any wonder the Iranians hate us. Well, then Saddam Hussein, who was a secular dictator and vastly better for the world and for America than were the thugs that rule Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, who are the primary sources of both funds and jihadists, as well as the ideology that inspires the jihadists. They are the wellspring from which terrorism flows. Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait. Was in our interest. The Kuwaiti emirs are some of the largest funders in the world of Islamic terrorism. That was in our interest. And he was poised to invade Saudi Arabia, which was always, which was also in our interest, to have a secular dictator over those countries as opposed to Islamists. But King George I didn't much like that, because his wealth came from the Sauds. He was up to his nostrils in aiding and benefiting the Sauds through their American investments, through the Carlyle Corporation into military companies. So, here now you have Saddam Hussein. He is in Kuwait, poised to invade Saudi Arabia. And the Sauds, even though we have supplied them with hundreds of billions of dollars of the most advanced weapons in the world, they're unable to defend themselves because of what Muslims, what Islam does to the minds of Muslims, makes them incompetent. And so now there are two factions vying for the opportunity to drive Saddam Hussein out. One of those is the United States, who is going to do so against its own interest because this was in the interest of King George I. The other is Osama bin Laden. You say, Osama bin Laden, how can in the world could Osama bin Laden drive out the Iraqis and the mighty military of the Iraqis? Well, who defeated the Russians in Afghanistan? We played the clip about a week ago of Zbigniew Brzezinski talking to the Mujahideen, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda in Pakistan, pointing over to the border of Afghanistan and telling them that God was on their side and that they should use the weapons America was supplying to go after the Russian-backed government. And they did, and we supplied the weapons. And so here's Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, and the Taliban saying, we defeated the Russian military in Afghanistan. We can sure as hell defeat Saddam Hussein in Kuwait. We will protect Saudi Arabia. Well, the Saud regime recognizes that, yeah, they'll prevail, but then what? With them in Saudi Arabia, with them in Kuwait, and armed to the teeth, what chance does the Assad regime have of keeping its private estate? When you arm jihadists, well, what happens? Civil war. Look at Syria. Look what's happening in Iraq. And they knew that would be the result, so they went and decided that they would let America fight its battle. Well, what do you think that did to the ego of one Osama bin Laden, spurned by his own country, spurned by his own religion? His chance for glory was thwarted by King George I. And it was then that he picked up on a plan that Ramzi Youssef had conceived in the Philippines, one that the United States was well aware of and chose to ignore. Welcome back to Shattering Mess. We were talking about the long history that led to 9/11. And the point of the story that we're going to return to is the realization that we brought 9/11 on ourselves because of Gulf War I. That's it. That's just as we brought the Syrian war on the world by our invasion of Iraq. It was our invasion of Kuwait on behalf of the Saudis that led directly to the terrorist attack of 9/11. What caused it? Now, the plan was conceived by Ramzi Youssef in the Philippines. He decided that that there were a number of schemes that could be deployed that would cause America great pain. The chemical mixing of chemical agents, which is why you can't board an aircraft with your cosmetics. He conceived and actually tested, and he conceived and wrote down every detail of the 9/11 plot, every last detail. And we knew of this for two reasons. One is in the Philippines, he was caught trying to assassinate the Pope. And when he was caught, they raided his apartment. They found the computer. They made this plot that he had conceived available to the world, including to the American intelligence services. You can read it. Go online. Google it. And we also knew of it because Ramzi Youssef, the author of the plot, a Philippine Muslim, had two encounters that were interesting. When the Oklahoma City bombings occurred, guess who it was that taught the bombers how to create the fuel bombs that they used? Ramzi Youssef. In the Philippines. And guess who was the perpetrator of the first bombing of the World Trade Center, the one that took place in the parking garage underneath the building with a fuel oil mixture bomb? Ramzi Youssef. When Ramzi Youssef was convicted at his trial for the first bombing of the World Trade Center, was that 95 in that range? His blindfold were taken off so he could look at the buildings and said they still stand. He said not for long. We brought it on ourselves. We knew about it. We did nothing to stop it. And then when it occurred, we decided that the best course of action would be to go invade Afghanistan. Why would you invade Afghanistan? 80% of the perpetrators were Saudi Arabians. When we conducted the 9/11 commission to investigate the incident, they determined that Saudi Arabia was culpable. But all of that evidence was redacted, kept secret from the United States. The military conducted their own investigation, came to the same conclusion. Saudi Arabia was culpable. But the Bush administration couldn't have that known, so they redacted that as well. 9/11 occurred because of what we did in the first Gulf War. The war we celebrate is the war that brought this upon us. Perpetrated by Muslims shouting Allahu Akbar. Muslims who left videos behind for loved ones that said, I'm doing this in the name of Allah, citing Quran and Hadith quotes while perpetrating this action. We brought it upon ourselves. And did we learn anything of it? No, what we did is we engaged in a constant state of war. Now, I'm going to read a Jefferson quote about the constant state of war and why governments do it and why we should be opposed to it. He said, of all the enemies to public liberty, war is perhaps the most to be dreaded, because it comprises and develops the germ of every other enemy to public liberty. War is the parent of armies. From these proceed debts and taxes. And armies and debts and taxes are the known instruments for bringing the many under the domination of the few. In war, too, discretionary power of the executive is extended. Its influence in dealing out officers and offices, honors, and emoluments, emoluments are payments for services, is multiplied. And all the means of seducing the minds are added to those of seducing the force of the people. The same malignant aspect in any Republican government may be traced in the inequity of fortunes and the opportunities of fraud growing out of a state of war and the degenerate state of manners and morals engendered by both. No nation can survive such a state.